This is CliffCentral.com. Download the Cliff Central app. Available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Cliff Central
Revolution. I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Do you need a holiday? Would you like to win an all-expenses-pay trip to Thailand for you and someone special? Cliff Central wants to make your holiday dreams come true. You could win an exotic holiday for two to Thailand simply by downloading the Cliff Central app and posting the hashtag Cliff Central app on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram. The Cliff Central app makes it easier than ever to listen to Cliff Central, and it's free. Even more reason to put yourself in the running. Entries close on the 6th of November, so go to the Apple Store or Google Play Store and download the Cliff Central app now. Details on cliffcentral.com. We made listening to us easier, and now we can make winning easier too. cliffcentral.com.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.
It is Monday afternoon, 3 o'clock. My name is Rosie Motena, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. Welcome to my show called Pan-African Connect, where we connect to all wonderful people, organizations, institutions that are based or in the diaspora, but are they are pertaining to the African continent. And today, I'm so excited about this. We're going to Botswana to speak to a multi-award-winning actor, writer, singer, poet. He has studied all around the world. He gets invited to some of the most top-notch events to perform. He's performed off-Broadway all before he turned 40 years old. But of course, before we do that, let me give you a few contact details. The number is 0861-555-189. Or you can get me on Twitter. My handle is PrincessRTM. And of course, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram. But like we always do every week, gotta start with this.
Yeah, you know what it is.
While pouring dime, soon as I hit the shoot, I go so hard. I'm Rosh Hashanah, I'll blow the shofar. Get my hair did, reading the Torah. I'm thugged out, I set my enemies with the menorah. And I got the pedal to the metal, cruising in my minivan, coming straight up out the shadow. Hear my grandma talk, but there's nothing you can tell her. We on the way to meet up with our Jewish diamond seller. She trying to set me up, but I'm breaking hearts. At least it's
star. Yeah, you know what it is. My nose and ass, they're both big. I use hot sauce on my laps and bagels. We on the corner, shooting dreidel. Reppin' for my parents. When you see me, you know everything.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
We shut it down, have my bar mitzvah at KFC.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
Got a call from my rabbi, this just in. There's a great deal on kosher chicken. Wearing big glasses, but I'm chic though. My bat mitzvah was cracking all week, ho. I'm sipping Clico, and I'm keeping Shabbos. Every Hanukkah, I devour the roots and lockers. No paper planes, but I'm taking flight. I got a free trip to Israel, birthright.
Yeah, you know what it is.
Welcome to the show. My name is Rosie Muthena, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. Welcome to my show called Pan-African Connect, where this week we're heading to Botswana again. Botswana seems to be the headline because we focused very hard a few weeks ago. And today we're going to be speaking to a multi-award-winning, classically trained actor and writer from Botswana. He's worked in Hollywood. He's worked off-Broadway. He's studied three different continents. He's actually studied. He gets invited all around the world to the most prestigious events to perform his solo pieces, his work. He's passionate about his country. And I don't even know how else to introduce him. Mr. Donald Molosi, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Rosie? Nice to talk to you.
Fantastic, fantastic. Thank you so much for coming onto the show. I mean, I was looking at your CV, and you know, for somebody under the age of 40, you have accomplished a lot.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here talking to you today. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, let's start from the beginning. So you were born in Gaborone, in what is the area called? Mahalapia.
Mahalape.
Yeah. And how far away is that from Gaborone?
It's about 2.5 hours from Gaborone, okay. North of Gaborone.
Yeah.
So I was born there. Yes.
Yeah. And where were you schooled? In Gaborone or as a child?
Yeah, I actually started school in Mahalape. Mm-hmm. And then we moved around a little bit. So I did sort of middle of primary school in Breda, which is in the Kalahari Desert.
Right.
And then came back to Gaborone and until I finished high school.
Oh, okay. And now, as growing up as a child, I mean, do you come from a family that is very, very creative? Did you have arts, you know, within the family bounds?
Yes, but it wasn't something that was put out as a possibility. Mm-hmm. It was something that, you know, that you had that cousin who could be this well, but he was singing in church. But it was never something that was put forward as something you could do with your life.
Right.
It was just like, oh, isn't it cute that this one can dance? I'm from that kind of family where, like, you know, my mother as a linguist, which is, I see it as an art of languages, and then my cousin's always singing and dancing. You know, so there is the art. It was always there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I had to think of it as something to do with my life, I didn't really have those examples that closely, right?
You said your mother was a linguist, but you also, I mean, you speak Setswana, Swahili, French, English fluently, and conversational Zulu and Ndebele. Is that just something that you've taken from her, or have you actively gone and studied those various languages?
I grew up in a family where, like, there were also a lot of languages because you had a parent who was interested in languages. But then I also had my own interest.
Yeah.
So I took, you know, my own initiative to study French, for example. And then once I felt like, okay, I'm kind of fluent in the classroom, but do I know how to communicate on the street?
Mm.
Then I went and lived in Morocco and Paris and then learned how to speak spoken French.
Oh, wow.
So all these languages, it's because I'm interested and I use them in my work when I write.
Mm.
I want to perform in them because I think we're different in different languages.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And also, you understand the different contexts once you really understand, especially the conversational type of languages, you know. Because I mean, I learned French through Alliance Française, but when I try and have a proper conversation with somebody, they laugh at me. They're like, "Well, only royalty speak that type of French."
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, and you learn so much from that. But let's start with your work. Let's start with your work. I mean, when was your first piece of writing? What age were you? About 16, 17?
Yes, I was going on 17. Mm. It was a one-man show that I wrote called Fragments.
Mm-hmm.
Now I look back at it and I just laugh because but this was before social media, thank God, because it was the most experimental melodramatic thing I had ever done.
Yeah.
Fragments. It was called Fragments. And then,
what was it about? Why was it so melodramatic?
It was because I was kind of experimenting. It was my first time doing solo, so I was experimenting with that. And then I was experimenting with the writing for myself, which then was kind of this wish list that did not piece together very well.
Okay.
You know, it's like, I want to play this, I want to play that, I want to play that. So in the end, we got this one-man show that was just like, yeah, it ticks off all the boxes, but it's a mess, right? So, but it was good to go through that. And I wrote about kind of the experience of being a young person in Botswana at the time.
Yeah.
That, you know, I was in a private school where there's a certain reality in a private school.
Yeah.
You step outside of the gates of that school, and it's a whole different reality. And these two worlds being in contrast to each other, I found a lot of stories in that.
Yeah, beautiful. But I mean, in terms of its melodramaticness, I mean, you obviously it was obviously on some level because you were invited to the New York City to perform.
Yes.
And what was the response to that?
Yes, absolutely. I was very, very happy that it got that response, that, you know, the president and the, some of the ministers at the time in our country felt that it it really captured the experience as well.
Mm.
I mean, I did the interviews with young people, you know, someone who's like pregnant at 15 or someone who's this and that.
Yeah.
So it came from the interviews. And then they thought, let's take this. Why don't you join the delegation to the UN General Assembly Special Session on Children in New York?
Yeah.
So I traveled with the then vice president and then presented it there in front of Nelson Mandela, which was another great honor that came from that. Yes, yes.
But, I mean, you've performed to phenomenal people all around the world. I mean, and we'll go on to that a little bit later. But shortly after that, that trip to New York, you packed up your bags and you moved to New York. You moved to the States, rather.
Yes.
You know, I 17 years old, I was scared to be walking down the street by myself. But you just did you move alone or did you go with your parents?
It was, I think, because I had just finished the high school examination and I had done really well in them, it was easier for me to get away with like moving. And so I moved because I was so convinced I could see myself growing. But also, I wanted to study politics. And the only country I could do that as a double major at the time was the U.S.
Right.
So that's why I then chose like to apply for the U.S. and, you know, do my college there.
Yeah. Because you studied at the Williams College and you won the Florence Chandler Fellowship. Which basically gave you the opportunity to do research for around the world for 12 months. What did you gain from that experience?
I got to just kind of fall back in love again with languages because all of a sudden I was forced to study what I do across cultures.
Yeah.
So I get to Morocco and then I'm like, I want to create like a comic figure, like something that's funny.
Yeah.
And a character that's funny in a setting in Morocco.
Mm.
Might not be as hilarious in Paris or in Kenya, you know. So it's a kind of create work that aspires to universality. Where I understand this might not be funny to a South African, even though it's funny to a Botswana. Let's find a way of being more nuanced, communicating it. So I learned a lot of that, and I think the plays that I wrote after that became more nuanced because I started to look at the gray areas. Where things don't quite fit, you know, like the identity of a Botswana, like, do you have to be black? Do you have to speak Botswana? Do you have to be born in Botswana? So, like, it made me challenge my own identity because I was people's identity, you know?
And then your next production that you did, which is quite a famous one, is Blue, Black and White. It's also a one-man show. One thing I want to ask is that do you prefer just doing one-man shows or are you moving into creating different characters? And then let's talk about what this play was about.
Oh, yes, yes. I do love solo performance. It's my favorite thing privately as a performer to do. But I realized that I also enjoy being part of an ensemble and being a team player.
Yeah.
So a lot of my plays, I tend to write the solo version so that the character I get to zoom in on one character.
Right.
By the time I write other characters around them, this one is so clear to me. The one who anchors the story.
Yeah.
And so Blue, Black and White was about the marriage of Sir Zakama, our founding president, to a white British woman in the 1940s.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, so of course that caused a lot of controversy, especially then. And I talk about how he kind of won his people over to support this marriage.
Yeah.
And also how he took lessons from being in an interracial marriage.
And also it's such a volatile time because it wasn't the norm.
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly. About that time and how he dealt with it, they both dealt with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you also won a Best Actor award for that performance, amongst many other things that you've won.
Actually, in 2008, at the One Festival, the first time I performed the solo, it won Best Actor.
Yeah.
And that was very encouraging to me because it has been so hard for me to get stories that are about African characters to get them off Broadway. It was very difficult for me to do that.
Yeah.
So then when this happened, I was like, oh, maybe there's just a light at the end of the tunnel, and I kept pushing.
Yeah. Because I suppose you needed to get that, I don't want to use the accreditation, but you just needed that acknowledgement from some of the key players. And if you get that award, suddenly you put onto a different stepping stone.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Because once you've won an award like that, then you automatically become a member on these academies, like the Academy for the Awards.
Right.
So that, you know, then I get to have more to say in the direction that the Academy takes, and saying let's reward more work that has people who are not blue-eyed and blonde at the center of stories. Let's forget that work as well.
Yeah.
So I was able to go into those spaces where I'm not necessarily an actor there, but I'm a board member and Academy member.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. But talking about that racial barrier, I mean, is it still, I mean, I know 10 years ago it was very, very different, but, you know, when I speak to some of my friends who are making it in LA, and they say, well, the decent roles up until last year for black people are if you're going to come in as a tribal figure or, you know what I mean? It isn't, there aren't very, very lucrative jobs. What is your take on that?
Yeah, it's still like that. I mean, it's so hard for us to be at the center of stories to begin with. And I think for me, it's even worse when we're not at the center of our story.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's a lot of that. And you find that when you look a certain way, like I'm black, I'm African, the only way that I have a really good chance of being celebrated as an actor by Hollywood is to portray my character, my black characters, either in servitude or in a way where the humanity is questionable.
Yeah,
I have to play either a monster or dictator or play a slave. Then that's when they take notice. But the moment I play someone like the Kama, they feel like, well, you're just like us and you're black. Well, that's the point, you know? So we are all human beings.
You know what I'm saying? We laugh at it, but it's a true reality. I mean, it's scary that, you know, that thought is still out there.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I got to tell you, it is coming down. It is changing a lot. I mean, when you look at the films that are being, you know, in production and pre-production now, where black characters are, it's changing.
Yeah.
It's really,
well, I mean, if you see it with the series, I mean, what Shonda Rhimes is doing is just beautiful. You know what I mean? With creating all these amazing roles, and it's not just for black women, it's for and black people. It's just, it's across the board, and really, you know, really nice meaty roles that have got beautiful journeys and so forth. So I suppose it is changing, and it's changing all around the world.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Viola Davis just won an Emmy for Best Drama Actress in a Series for the first time in 67 years. Lupita's success, we know a lot about that. And someone like David Oyelowo, what he did with Selma. So there's a very clear message that the audiences are saying to the studios, we want to see stories of people from all over the world, not just a certain section.
But also because of the rise of different people all around the world, that have got to come from an African origin, suddenly the world's realizing how sexy and how great Africa is. You know, suddenly we're not the continent that's just starving babies with flies that need water. You know what I mean? It's that you're noticing that there's raw talent. People are coming here to utilize our talent, to tell our stories. And I suppose that's also something that we need to take care of, is that we need to start really pushing our stories ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that's what you're doing, because you opened the door even at the age of 17. And although you said it was rather melodramatic, but you got the story across. You know what I mean?
Thank you. But, you know, it's only, I mean, when I was 17, now I think, because this is kind of like a full circle moment for me. Like, the people that I was watching at that time were people like you on television, you know, people like John Carney on stage. And I was like, if they are doing it on stage, they look like me. I belong on stage as well. I belong in television. Because the literature that I grew up with reading, it was books of, you know, these beautiful white children playing in the snow, eating apples, yeah. going to the sea. They were lovely, but I wasn't in them.
Yeah, it's true.
There was no one who looked like me in those books. And I sort of thought, oh my God, maybe people like me don't belong in books for a while as a child.
Wow.
So then when I saw people like you on TV, I was like, we belong there. And that's why I believed that since then.
Yeah, that's really beautiful, beautiful. Let's talk about Today It's Me. What was the inspiration behind that?
I'm sorry, behind what? I didn't get that.
Today It's Me, your other piece.
That story, it was one of those moments where I came across it and I thought, why was this not in my curriculum? Where I felt like, but a friend of mine was, you know, we were playing like YouTube clips, and then she says to me, you know, since you like stories of real people, why don't you look at this guy from Uganda, the musician. And I looked at this story, and I was just so taken aback.
Yeah.
You know, the first prominent African to say he had HIV/AIDS in the 80s, and to use his music career to document what was happening to his body, his life, his relationships. For me, it just gave me a whole different approach of art. And so I dug up the story, and I went to Uganda to live there for a while to dig up the story.
Oh, beautiful. And but I mean, isn't Uganda's one of my most favorite African countries? And people
it's
are so
lovely
people are beautiful. The people are welcoming. It's just there's another age. I think something happened in a previous life with me in Uganda because you're just mentioning it. I'm like my heart is warming up. And how did and what was the response from you know? And I'm sure it was a positive one because East Africans' hospitality is just it's absolutely astounding.
Oh yeah.
But what was the response from Ugandans on Motswana telling Ugandan story?
I got that response. I only took it to Uganda this year.
Okay.
But for 5 years, I've been doing it around the world. And there are Ugandans in every country I've been who watched it, and they were very impressed. Mm. The man's children, his daughters came to watch it, and his son, and they felt it was an excellent portrayal of their father.
Yeah.
And so then they said, we want you to actually star in a documentary film where you portray him, because you portray him so accurately.
Wow.
So the response was amazing. By the time I took it to Uganda this year, I was very nervous because I was thinking, you know, and now I'm taking it to a much larger audience. But it went very well, standing ovations, and we're working on bringing it back to Uganda.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant! And have you toured anywhere? I mean, we'll look into your tours in the States. But besides Uganda, where what other countries have you touched on?
Just the past 2 months, I was touring in Uganda, Kenya. So I went to Kenya and performed Blue, Black and White, as well as Today It's Me. And then went to Paris and then to Brussels. So I just finished Belgium.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting market because with some of my work, I would do bits in French just so that the audience is not alienated by English all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really fun for me to do.
That is incredible, incredible. We're going to take a quick break because we need to pay our sponsors. And then when we get back, let's talk about, because you also studied in London, and you've got a big announcement, which I'm dying to hear what it is. So we'll talk about that after the break.
At iStore, we love Apple stuff, but we're only human. Sometimes we drop our iPhones on the road, face down, and it makes us sad. That's why we came up with iCare Plus, a nifty little product exclusive to iStore for when stupid things happen to good people with awesome phones. It'll have your beloved iPhone covered for water, screen, and physical damage. So come to iStore. Why would you go anywhere else? Visit myistore.co.za for more info. T's and C's apply.
Pan-African Connect on CliffCentral.com.
Black belts in the buildings, ladies and gentlemen. It's a spare keys to the city. But your boy T-U-X, the bricklayer, scenario. Too glad to where you at, girl.
I kinda lie.
I've been hustling since El Angola, Tona. Cost a
The mess is on, tuxedos on this. Who would have thought that a Joa could put a hex up on us? From the city that's hot, know how to make a scene. You might have seen us on televisions and big screens. We hit the spot, you stop, gasping for air. Got all my fauna women saying, stupid my hair. Hands up like monkey bars, screaming, yippee, yeah. Black belts like stop, look but don't stare. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. When the beat drops, let that mother tonna pop.
Like two fingers picking up, bleed wallet there. I run the club, go looking for a dweller there. Before the chick, I will sing a tiny fire there. My phone thing, no, get one in the target there. Sicking your mini lapa, sicking your planet there. 2 a.m. rap, baby, need the jacket there. Looking so fine, how high, knock a rocket there.
Look at them, and their eyes is all I see in them. Shaking them, breaking the gazing, they just wanna be with them. Plus the track is just rocking, it just kinda comes true to them. Keep with the hustle, all the realists gotta witness some more. These women and fellas, the Benjamins is just rolling in. They gotta live with them and let the system deal with them. But the more money they get, the more problems keep on stressing them. They keep on lacing them, setting them, no mistaking them.
Been hustling in Langalichona.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Rosie Motena, aka the Afro Yiddish Princess. Today it's all about Botswana, and that was King Tux from Botswana performing his song. What is it called again? Forgotten about it. Anyway. But more importantly, my guest today is Mr. Donald Molosi. Now, for those of you who've just tuned in, he's a multi-award-winning classically trained actor. He's a writer. He speaks Setswana, Swahili, French, English, can understand a bit of Zulu and Ndebele. He's traveled all around the world. He has degrees from so many different universities. But also, more importantly, he's passionate about what he does. Donald, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Rosie.
Cool. So let's talk about, okay, so now we spoke about your study in the States, and then you went to London and studied at the Academy of Music and Drama, LAMDA. That's quite a prestigious institution.
It is, and I feel that a lot of what I use in my profession today, I learned at that drama school.
Mm.
And you'll know that some of the alumni include David Oyelowo, who went there, Chiwetel Ejiofor, all these people. Mm. So when I was at LAMDA, I was very aware of what I wanted to get out of it as a performer.
Yeah. And have you worked besides the time when you were studying? Have you actually worked in London on theatre?
I have not much worked in London as a theatre. I've done some reading, but not like an actual gig in a theatre. Or film yet.
Yeah,
but
yet.
but I think that's coming. Now that I'm based in Botswana, London is closer than New York, so I see that coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I can actually feel it coming on for some reason. And now you're also the official ambassador for Brand Botswana. What does that mean?
So they asked me about 4 years ago. You know, to represent their brand, and I said, "What does it entail?" And I was very happy to find out that they don't actually limit me in what I do.
Mm.
They just support what I do, and then ask that I get their mandate out to the public.
Right.
But only where it's appropriate to my project, which is why I really signed on, because I felt I don't want to be performing propaganda, and they respect that.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about it.
And you're the recipient of the Karma Brilliant Spirit Award. What is that about?
Oh, yes, that's the award that the president gives to an artist in Bhutan as the highest award. And it started in the early 2000s, and I'm still the youngest recipient of it. And it was for my contribution to the art. And it's for people who are under 18 years old. So
yeah,
I was happy to get it in my 17th year.
Wow. Wow, that is amazing.
Eligible.
That is amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, so now you've been on social media saying you've got this big announcement.
Yes.
What is the big announcement?
Yes, I have an announcement. So, as you know, when I did Blue, Black and White on Broadway, it was the first time Mutwana was on Broadway, or Mutwana Story was there.
Yeah.
So now, some years later, I've just signed a deal to publish my manuscript and all my plays about Sarah Sekama in one book.
Oh, wow.
And with a New York City publishing company called The Mantle Books.
That is amazing. Congratulations. And when did you hear this beautiful news?
Thank you. Just a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that everything is sealed, January 2015, this book is going to hit the shelves.
Yeah.
And it'll be the first time in our country that we have a book, like a dramatic text about our president ever published in a book. So I'm very excited. And next year when we celebrate 50 years as a country, for us to have this book, I think will be amazing.
Yeah, because it all just falls into line. That is absolutely amazing. Your parents
must be
incredibly, incredibly proud. Are they still with us?
Thank you. No, unfortunately, but, you know, I'm a very spiritual person, so I always feel that we don't really die and disappear.
Yeah. No, they're definitely shining over you.
Thank you.
Let's talk about some of the international invites that you've had. I mean, you were invited in 2010 to China, to Taiwan, to commemorate Taiwan's centenary celebrations. What was that about?
That was so interesting, Rosie, because, you know, it's interesting that in this business, you know, you start off as a performer, and then you realize that your work is understood as a kind of a cultural asset.
Yeah.
So then you become kind of a spokesperson for culture. So I ended up somehow being invited by the president of Taiwan, Taiwan President Ma, when the country was celebrating 100 years as a republic. And so I was very happy to go there as the guest of the president to perform, to meet the president for the first time.
Wow.
Because he invited me without having met me, just only having encountered my work.
Yeah.
And so that was fantastic because I was there and I went there thinking I'm representing Botswana, but I came out feeling like I represented Africa.
Yeah.
And that was the most empowering feeling of it all.
Yeah. That is beautiful, man. Out of all the places that you've performed, I mean, which, because you say you're based back in Botswana now, but so far in your career, where, first of all, what was the most memorable performance that you've had? And what was the most memorable invite that you've had?
The most memorable performance would have to be this year when I went to Tiger Cluj in the Northwest Province, and I performed Sarah Sekama's story at his school where he went as a boy.
Yeah.
So I was performing it in the same dormitories where he slept,
wow.
the same church where he slept for 5 years, the same path. And there was just something about the spiritual presence of my son there that just made the performance, I felt like I didn't have to push. Something else just kind of took over. But that was really special.
Well, I'm sure, because the spirit and the energy must have been incredibly strong there.
There's an energy, exactly. And I remember actually feeling like, wow, something else has taken over. And it was just a beautiful feeling for me.
Yeah.
So that's a highlight. And then the invite, I'd have to say, when I was invited by former vice president, current president of Obama, to be part of his delegation to the UN, when I was 17 years old, and then performing in front of the UN, the world's president.
Wow.
That was an invitation that was really made an impression on me that I could perform in front of people like Nelson Mandela and Kofi Annan
yeah.
and have them stand and give me a standing ovation. I mean, what that does to you at 17, it just gives you
It doesn't even lay out a red carpet. It's a golden carpet that's laid out for you.
You know, yeah. And then Mandela shakes your hand and you feel like you're doing something right. Mm. So those are very memorable to
me. But also, you know, a lot of these people are awarded these opportunities, but sometimes they don't realize what they're awarded. You were obviously very, very cognizant and clear of what was laid in front of you, and that's why you just pushed forward.
Yeah.
As a child, what did you dream of?
As a child, I wanted to be on television.
cool. I really did. Yeah.
And I was always like, I want to be on television. But it was such a strange thing because every child wanted to be on television.
Mm.
So then I was like, you know, I think that's kind of thing why my parents had a hard time. Like, is this just a child wanting to be on television or is this an actual conviction?
Mm.
And then when I, you know, started, like, when I was a teenager, I experimented with radio and TV.
Yeah.
And then theater became my drug of choice.
But the thing is, once you taste that drug, it's potent. You know what I mean? Once you're a thespian, always a thespian. You know, it's just, and what you can only understand and feel their passion once you're on that stage, and it's an opening night, and it's that adrenaline rush.
You know,
and, you know, like I read in a Reader's Digest many years ago that the thrill that an actor has before they start performing is on the same adrenaline rush as when you have a car accident. So that is how
fast.
That's
what I heard. Yeah. It's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
amazing. Beautiful. What are you working on at the moment?
I am preparing for going back off Broadway in November.
Mm-hmm.
So I am actually, towards the end of this week, I'll start rehearsing for my show called Motswana, which I'll do off Broadway in November.
Beautiful. And what is Motswana about?
It's about imagining the African continent without borders.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing how freeing that is to our identity, because it takes us to this humanist place where xenophobia almost seems suicidal.
Yeah.
You cannot hurt your brother without hurting yourself.
Yeah.
So when we imagine ourselves without borders, we really realize we are one people.
Mm.
So that's what Motswana is about.
Well, sounds like something that you should definitely bring to South Africa.
I would love to take it around the world and to South Africa, especially because, you know, I mean, the way that I talk about the borders in Botswana and South Africa in it makes it as much a South African play as it is a Botswana play.
Yeah. And how long is your run in November?
It'll be for a week because it's part of a festival.
Yeah.
And some of the events will be actually an event where I'll get honored for being I'm the actor who's appeared the most times at solo off-Broadway in the past 5 years.
Wow.
So they'll be giving me that honor. Mm. I don't think it's an award, but it's an honor.
Mm.
And I'm very happy that that's the case, because the last time that awards of this nature were given to an African was in the 90s, to Mbongeni Ngema, and people like that who paved the way.
Wow.
So for more than 20 years later, for Africa to be acknowledged, not because I did something in one project, but a cumulative effort.
Yeah.
I'm very, very happy about that.
Yeah, because there's been a progression and it's been on a positive note.
Thank you.
In terms of TV, what type of TV work have you done overseas?
I really, really would love to do TV.
Mm.
But I found, like in the U.S., for you to do TV, you have to be on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Really, most of the time, unless you're doing, like, Law and Order. And I was on Broadway, and I was trying to nurture that career, which meant that I lost out on the TV prospects on the West Coast.
Yeah.
But that's something I'm bearing more in mind, because I want to do more in front of the camera now.
Well, I don't say you've lost out. I think you've accumulated a lot from the experiences, and then you take that over time to go to the West Coast. You know what I mean? You definitely will make it, but I think you've made a phenomenal mark not for only for Africans, but for your country, but just for young actors in general. You know, we did this all before the age of 30. You know what I mean? So don't worry, baby. You got lots of time. We're gonna see you receiving some of those awards.
Thank you so much. I mean, that's part of why I do what I do, is to facilitate the self-love, our self-love as a people. You know, it sounds like such a basic thing, but, you know, once we love ourselves enough to just feel like, you know, our story is enough.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and to believe it and to push it.
Yes. I think one of the things that I push up whenever I try to get something like this off Broadway, I would have a much easier time with Shakespeare, of course, if I did that. But one of the things I push against is that people are not used to the African stories that I'm telling. People in the U.S., they're really not. I mean, I'm telling stories of, you know, interracial couples in the 40s, and they're like, really, that happened? Or I'm telling stories of Africans who, to them, you know, they never imagined them, that there'd be an African who has a certain experience in life, you know. So I try to think of these as certain things. You know, you can be African and be Indian-looking.
That's so true, because, I mean, I've got a friend in Kenya who's Indian. And when he goes around the world and he says, I'm Kenyan, people are like, I think you're a bit confused. You know?
Exactly. So I'm providing the stories like your friend's story to say, this is another way of being African, and it's just as valid as ABC.
Choose a well-known political figure, alive or dead, that you would love to portray in a theatre production.
Would love to portray Thomas Sankara. And Thomas Sankara and Steve Biko, I think of them in the same, even though they're so different in a lot of, but I think of them in similar thing. Thomas Sankara, definitely.
Beautiful. And people that you'd like to collaborate with in the future?
I would love to work with Akin Omotosh. I've always respected his work, and the work that he's doing on film now is exactly what I was talking about, a more complicated, nuanced Africa.
Yeah.
And I would love to work with Ava DuVernay, who's the director of Selma. And of course, I would love to work with you.
Two out of those three we could possibly make happen. You know what I mean? Because Akin's my brother, so we need to make a couple of phone calls and see what he's doing in the future.
You've
got a golden calf in front of you, so I believe whatever you say. God is like, okay, it's coming. We're going to put it in front of you, Mr. Mosi. Just calm down. It's coming. Also, you're heavily involved with the UN and the African Union. What type of work have you done with them in the past?
It's been mostly what I did with the UN, where to popularize some of the treaties and the charters they write. Especially about the rights of the children, because the rights of the children is my kind of the cause that's closest to my heart. So, for example, when they came out with the charter on the rights and responsibilities of the African child, I did a series of plays around that so that it's disseminated through entertainment.
But where is the state? I mean, I do a lot of work with Barry Hart in Botswana around children and women empowerment. And what are the gaps? What needs to be filled? Because I mean, I could speak from a South African perspective, but what are the main issues that are happening on the ground in Botswana?
In Botswana, I feel the same about it that I felt 10 years ago when I started this, which is that we tend to talk about the young people, first of all, as a problem, right, as an irritant, and not so much as an asset, which they are. And so then in our approach, we leave them out of the key conversations about them. And the most, glaring example is how we celebrate June 16, you know, Day of the African Child. And you will see that it's just a day for a lot of adults, these speeches about what children think, and that one child who kind of says the thank you at the end of the program. If you had just had an event about children where they are virtually invisible, and they are just there as these tokens that say thank you at the end of it.
Yeah.
So I think if we just put, we need the young people, do we talk about the artists, to put them at the center of their conversation, but we tend to decide for children, decide for artists.
Yeah, it kind of like goes back to the old adage that, you know, children must be seen and not heard.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, what's this last week has been incredibly exhilarating of what's been happening in South Africa, where our youth took charge. And it was, I went to the two rallies that they had, and it was phenomenal. You know, we went through this major surge where a lot of us were thinking, well, what's going to happen to the people coming after us? Because, number one, a lot of youth don't have proper role models. So they just, you know what I mean? So just very confused. I mean, we know what we're like when we're that age. But listening to these young girls and these young men talk and passionate and speaking with a really, really strong sense of passion and authority. And the fact that they shut down. You know, they shut down this country for a while. So I think, you know, if other countries across Africa need to take an example of what actually happened in South Africa here, because it was absolutely phenomenal. And yes, of course, the media will pick up on the negative sides. But wherever there's going to be mass action, there's always going to be a bit of a negative revolt. You know, and they're focusing a lot on that. But for me, what was just so powerful was 22-year-old girls walking down the streets of Braamfontein.
Wow.
And the images, I mean, they're up on my Facebook page, are just, it was exhilarating, to say the least, you know?
Wow. And that is amazing. And the courage, you know, the courage that it takes.
Yeah. You know, and it's not, and what you know, of course there were people saying, well, it's all just about a race thing, and it's about the political situation. But yes, that is part of the story. But when, like, there was one girl that I was speaking to from a synagogue, and she knew somebody that was going to secret lectures, because there were still secret lectures that were happening at the different universities, and somebody coined onto it. And when they explain the reason behind it, that it's not just a black and white issue, it's there's so many other factors leading to and why people have the right to education. She stopped going to the lectures and got on the Gautrain and went to Pretoria, you know. So, you know, change is inevitable, but it's great that the powers that be stood up and listened to it. But what are your you've also got your own theatre group in Botswana?
Yes, I've started this year Folktale Theatre Company, which is again in the best thing spirit of courage, of the courage that now the young people in South Africa are showing for their education and how they would like their world to be. Is I'm trying to have that same courage in saying this is how I want us to document our history and perform it.
Beautiful.
So Folktale Theatre Company is using, taking all these stories that are not in our textbooks and putting them on stage and in film. And because of my background, I'm establishing it as a bridge between Broadway and then the arts in Botswana.
Yeah.
So there'll be exchanges and things happening as we grow.
And how many people do you have in the group so far?
So far, there's three of us who are the core members.
Yeah.
And when we need people for some project, we'll cast them, but their contract will only be for that.
Oh, right. So then, it's on spec and on production and so forth. So after your run in November, are you going to be, because you said that you're mainly based in Botswana, are you going to be staying there for a little bit longer, or is the States calling you?
I'll be staying a little bit to kind of plan a little bit some other things for next in London and then in New York, but I will be back in Botswana in time for Christmas.
Okay. And what's on the cards after that? I mean, where you've mentioned a few of the people that you want to collaborate with, and that without a doubt it's going to happen. But what else is on the cards?
I'm so excited. I'm actually in talks. God, I haven't spoken to you. See, I trust you so much, Rosie. I'm going to tell you.
Yay!
So there's this Sarissa Kama film that's being done.
Yeah.
David Oyelowo playing Sarissa Kama, Rosamund Pike. In the way that it's written, there isn't really a way for me to be part of it as an actor.
Yeah.
but I'm in talks about featuring in it somehow.
Oh, wow.
So I'm hoping that by the time we get to the end of December, I'll have news to tell about me featuring in it. But it will be other people's performances. I won't be in the center the way I've been with my second wife. But I'm really, I would love that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what they say is that there are no small roles, only small actors. So the fact that that even if it's just starring in the featuring in the background, you know, you're going to be working with some great people, which is what it's all about. Yes. Beautiful, beautiful.
I know.
Yeah, carry on. So what were so in terms of work that's classified, are we allowed to even go into the L word? Is love on the cards for Mr. Molosi?
What of the word?
Hello? Are we losing you? Hello? Okay, I think we've lost him. We're just going to play a song called Zeus from My Africa, and then let's try and get Donald back on the line to say goodbye. All right, there was a little bit of a glitch in the system. Sorry about that, Donald, but at least we got to play a little bit of Zeus. So, am I allowed to ask about love?
You are allowed to ask about love because there's nothing interesting happening about love.
Oh, man. Okay, but then at least I'll be the first when something interesting does happen about love. Then because you trust me, I get it.
You know.
beautiful.
It becomes difficult to have a solid relationship when you're traveling so much.
Yeah.
But I do have a solid relationship. But it's one of those things that, you know, it could easily eclipse the work. So
yeah.
I'm very happy to have it just happen. It is private space and must be visible.
Yeah. No, 100%. And also, while you're pushing your passion and everything else, it's just, you know, it is difficult. But I wish we had a bit more time to chat with you. There's just so much more that I wanted to chat with you about, but the time is up.
This has been so wonderful. Thank you so much.
It's only a pleasure, and we will keep on watching you. Thank you for, I'm going to say thank you on behalf of other Africans, because you really have put up the Southern Africa flag right up there. You know, and more importantly is that your humbleness. You know, I watched your interview again on CNN, and for our listeners, if you log on to CNN, there's a beautiful interview just about, I mean, they didn't even capture everything. They should have given you the slot for half an hour, really, because I need to speak to that Rosie at CNN and sort out a longer profile, because it really, really was beautiful. And so carry on pushing your passion and your humility, because that is what I think one of the reasons why God just keeps on granting all these wonderful opportunities and places and everything. So keep shining, and we will be in touch. And I'm going to work on those collaborations with myself and Akin.
Absolutely, I would love that.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Okay, have a beautiful day.
Bye, Rosie. You too.
Bye. That was Mr. Donald Molosi from Botswana. What a great guy. I mean, he studied in London. He studied in the US. He studied in Africa. He's traveled all around the world with his pieces of work. He's incredibly passionate about Africa, incredibly passionate about Botswana. And, you know, I mean, the first time I met him about 2-3 months ago, the guy was like the guy from next door. You know, he's just so chilled, so humble. Really, really beautiful person. And, you know, I like to see people like that succeeding and the rest of the world standing up to what they're about. Of course, if you want to listen to this interview again, please download it. Also, that competition that we're running, if you want to run a trip to Thailand, more information is on the website, www.cliffcentral.com. If you want to drop me a line, I'm on Twitter, PrincessRTM, and, of course, on Facebook and Instagram. Until next week, have a wonderful week and keep the passion alive.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.